Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Christopher, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and join the podcast. I appreciate you. Quite a busy man. And we know you're somebody who's pioneering decarbonizing digital and data ethics in the world of advertising. And I'd love to just have you introduce yourself and tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, for sure. So first off, thanks for having me. Very happy to be here and to be talking about this. So I'm an advertising professional, been in this space for a very long time. And I actually got into advertising because I'm a devout environmentalist. And the way I describe it to people is the environment has a people problem. People have a misinformation problem, and misinformation is an advertising problem, right? Where advertising is the financial model behind the flow of most information in society, certainly most free information in society, or, you know, most information that's not gatekeeped. So if you want to address a lot of the issues that exist in society, everything from sustainability and sustainable behaviors to data privacy to combating misinformation, right, which is affecting a lot of global politics at the moment and things like that, you really have to address the underlying economic model behind those systems, which in a large regard is advertising. Now, there's some other pieces, you know, it's called the attention economy, right, which is all of the aspects of society that make money off of people's attention, which is where a lot of data is gathered. ChatGPT can almost be considered part of that as well, right? Because they're trying to keep people engaged with their services. So I got into advertising a long time ago, or when I graduated college, under that fundamental idea. And so I wanted to work for the large advertising companies, brands and things like that, admired brands, so that I could understand the ins and outs of how the industry works, so that I could hopefully play an influence in getting and moving the industry towards a more ethical mindset in terms of how it was respecting people's attention, how it was respecting data, how it was taking into account sustainability needs and that kind of stuff. And so I've worked for most advertising is a lot of it is separated into large holding companies. So I've worked for various of the large holding companies designing their oftentimes working with or designing their sustainability initiatives. As well as I launched a group called the Conscious Attention Economy Initiative, alongside the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, UNCTAD, in partnership with their New Economics for Sustainable Development Initiative, which is basically what are the factors in society that are not being captured by GDP, but add an immense amount of value to people's lives. And so we worked with them on what we call the conscious attention economy, which is how do you achieve the UN sustainable development goals, such as, you know, reducing poverty, increasing well-being, more positive relations with the environmentalism. How do you actually achieve that in the digital world, in the attention economy, right? Because if you're talking about, let's say, reducing poverty, how does that translate into a world that's focus on data privacy, right? Or the exchange of value is respectful of people. So I co-authored their policy paper on the new economics for sustainable development in the attention economy, and have worked very closely with the UN and other groups to bring that into reality. And now also advise businesses on how to achieve those, or how to actually create a more sustainable, attention economy or business model in the advertising space that respects people to a greater degree and makes them more part of the conversation.
Brilliant. That's a fantastic intro there. And I'd love to pull it to the sort of present day. I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about the sort of data ethics and advertising, and what can companies do to be ethical and transparent while not sort of sacrificing their audience's reach.
There was a study that came out last year. I believe it was by Telegraph, but it might've been a different entity. I might be mixing things up. That showed that advertising is actually the second largest funder of illicit activity in the world after drugs. And then when you go to programmatic advertising, there was a study that found over 50%, and programmatic advertising is like auction-based advertising. It's table stakes in the advertising world, but essentially it's an automated way to, if, let's say you, Josh, you show up on a website and you have a lot of, there's data segments that are indicating, you know, your preferences and your behaviors and things like that. And let's say I'm a brand and I want to reach you, that you'll show up on that website, and then a bunch of AI and technology on the back end will match the advertiser who's trying to reach someone like you to you. And so then all that happens in, but that whole process, which was meant to add more transparency into the advertising ecosystem, is actually, because there's so much technology on the back end, that's a little bit esoteric is maybe the word I'd use, or you know, complicated. It actually has added a lack of transparency. It has obscured the whole process. And I bring that up to say that that process in advertising has actually been found to have over 50% of those impressions or those ads that get served are served fraudulently. So whether or not that is served or fraudulently or to a site that is designed to just make money off of advertising, right, rather than create a good content experience. So that includes ads that are not serving to real people, right, bots, ads that are serving behind the, you know, you don't even see them, right? They're serving behind the page, or they're serving when the computer is off or the TV is off or something like that, to sites that are stealing content and then, you know, putting it up on their site and then serving ads along stolen content, or, you know, content that is misinformation or is designed to mislead people. So I say that in relation to your question as into how companies can try and combat that or can try and be more ethical while still maintaining their reach. We need to start and have an honest conversation as an industry around the fact that the reach that we currently have is not really up to our standards of, as an industry, we want it to be. So overall, if we're saying that 50% is fraud or is misinformation based and that kind of stuff, that is already an enormous opportunity to clean that up in order to avoid having 50% or 25% or whatnot of ads serving to, you know, places that are not even driving a brand goal, right? Are not driving the outcome that an advertiser wants. So if we can add more transparency into that system, the solutions to this that are focused on reach are sometimes get people into the wrong mindset because it focuses on quantity over quality. And if you have quality, you can expand that out to quantity because you know that you have the right starting point, and then you could find people similarly. Right. So if you start from that ground of how do we increase the quality by creating more transparency with people, you will actually have greater brand outcomes and reach the same, mostly the same people. But even if you're reaching a little less because because the experience is so much stronger, you are gaining much more value for your company.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I was laughing at the beginning there, not out of anything funny. It's just the fact that stat is just terrifying.
It very much is. And it's one of those things that, you know, criminal organizations have caught on to this. And same with governments, right? I mean, I'm not going to call on any specific government for the sake of it, but we all know certain governments that are pushing these things, and they are widely aware of this. And the system is not designed to combat that. And it's created a real strong issue in terms of both the brand experience in terms of what they're trying to get, but also the user experience and what you and me experience online. And the whole thing's become a little bit toxic, is the truth.
What does it mean, or what does being known as an ethical advertiser unlock for brands? Is it a loyalty thing? Is it a transparency thing? Or is it something else entirely?
For example, when it comes to the sustainability side of things, like environmental sustainability, there's this term, people have heard the term greenwashing, right? Which is, you know, brands essentially saying they're doing a bunch of good things, but they're actually not. And then that gets, oftentimes society finds out about that, right? And then it hurts the brand value. There's also this other aspect that's called green hushing, which is all of the things that a brand is doing that are great or that are in the right direction, but they're not sharing with people, right? Which is loss of brand value. So depending on which business side you come from this, right? Because if you're let's say you're a company with enormous amount of data, right? And you want to sell that to advertising companies. For example, Chase just announced, and this is public information, but they announced that they're creating an advertising arm, right? Let's say them as a business, they are selling that data to advertisers, but it comes out that they are not respecting data privacy. Now, if I'm someone who's just using their banking services, and now I'm hearing that Chase is not respecting my data privacy, that affects whether or not I want to use their banking services, right? So a lot of these companies that are selling their data actually have other, they're selling the data is not their core part of their business. So they almost jeopardize their core part of their business if they get found out to be doing something unethical on the data side. But let's say you're also, you're a brand who's not selling data, you're just buying that data, right? You're a brand who, you're an advertiser. The relationship you have with people and they and their understanding as to how you are respecting their autonomy their autonomy, their wishes as a person, right? You feel that the company is in line with your values. And this covers the spectrum because some people don't really care. Some people care a lot, right? And you need to find, meet your audience where they are. But ultimately what I'm getting at is there is a large potential brand loss if you are seen as unethical in this space. And it might not be the first error you make. It might be the 10th error you make. It might be the 5th. It might be the 20th. But at some point, if you are seen as a bad actor in this space, chickens will come home to roost. Like it will affect you. The other piece is going back to both in a sense of, the greenwashing as an example, it hurts you. And the greenwashing, if you're not talking about what you're doing better, there's a lot of value to be gained there. The other piece, though, as going back to what I was first saying, is the advertising ecosystem right now is being presented as more accurate, transparent, and precise than it actually is. And part of the value of being more ethical for a brand in this space is you get to have more honest conversations with the people who are giving you your data and the people you're selling ads to so that you can actually add more transparency into that for yourself and greatly increase the value of that data, right? And from the sustainability perspective, reduce the cost that you have of, the energy in the system or, spending ads on what are called, or spending money on what are called made for advertising sites, right? Which we've all seen them, we get to a page, it's a small little bit of content and like 20 ads on the page, right? Stings for
most
consumers.
News sites.
Yeah, exactly, right? It stings for individuals, but also stings for brands because you're now one of 20 ads on a page and you're paying, it might be a slightly lower cost compared to something else, but because the ad experience sucks, the cost is basically almost wasted money. And so there is a loss to your reputation from the side of being found out that you're doing things wrong from a brand value, but there's also a significant gain to be had by being more ethical, transparent, and communicative because the value that is currently being communicated now is not realistic. And so there's a lot to be gained there. And so that's really what I focus brands on is we need to clean this up and you need to, and in large part, the advertising ecosystem hasn't really changed that much in the past 10 years, other than some technologies behind it, but the overall model behind it. And so there's a lot to be gained by cleaning it up and being more ethical, which sometimes runs counter to people's minds. I think ethical is a little bit more of like a nice to have, or it's something that is philanthropic almost, right? It's an almost a nonprofit mentality. But in my experience, and I think the future of advertising, it is where the largest growth is going to come from, reaching untapped audiences who are not currently being tapped, doing things more ethically so that you have more transparency, so you have more insight, so that you can be more accurate and precise in the future.
We've talked a lot about companies and their advertisers being ethical in terms of their practices, or maybe not in some cases. But what is the role of consumers in this? What are they the ones that should be, or are they the ones that are driving brands to be more sustainable?
It kind of depends from the whether or not a brand is becoming more sustainable, let's say, or environment. I like to say environmentally sustainable, because, and I'll trim myself up and just say sustainable, but sustainable sometimes in the business space just means like living, you know, having a business model that lasts a long term, which relates to environmentally sustainable, but environmentally sustainable specifically from the, you know, carbon footprint standpoint, the supporting wildlife standpoint, supporting local, you know, planting trees, that type of stuff. And so if you're a certain brand, let's say you're Patagonia or you're REI or you're even a Toyota or a Tesla, right? There's a certain aspect of your brand value is coming from people pushing you, wanting more environmentally sustainable solutions, and you're offering it to them. But unfortunately, the advertising ecosystem is part of a cultural thing that we're dealing with right now, where we actually, as people, are as individuals, consumers, we are engaging in environmentally unsustainable behaviors, right? Blanking on the term, but you know, clothes that you buy once and you wear once and then you throw it away.
Oh, fast super fashion, yeah.
Yes, fast fashion. Thank you. The fact that so much of sodas you buy come in plastic bottles, right? And there's, you know, they say they're recyclable, but most plastic is not recyclable, right? So recyclable is a bit of a misdirection. So there is some aspect of this that is being driven by individuals, consumers, saying to brands, we want something better, and brands responding to that. But ultimately, in my opinion, and this has definitely been historical in relation to the impetus that brands or companies put on individuals, they make it seem like it's an individual choice problem, right? People need to choose to be more sustainable, environmentally sustainable, or they need to choose to respect their data privacy more, right? By not selling their data to all these companies. But, you know, for example, on the data privacy side, I don't know, you know, I'm sure it's experience, but if you give a new website, and every new website you come to says, am I allowed to share your data? Am I allowed to share your data? Right. And they make it multiple click-throughs, buttons you have to click through in order to say no. So if you're the average person and you're not, you know, widely educated on data privacy, you're probably just going to say yes. Right. Because you're like, one, I don't care. Maybe you don't care that much. Or you're just like, I'm busy today and I don't want to go, you know, I don't want to go through this right now. And so the same website might ask you over the course of a week, you could say no 8 times, but then the 9th time you say yes, now they have your data. Right. So I say that to say that it's kind of disingenuous right now, the way the ecosystem is working in terms of actually giving people a choice to which behaviors they want to exhibit. And so that's part of why my response to this is, we're at the stage where the companies need to stop treating it like, even though the individuals do have power, right? I don't want to take that away from them, or say that they're completely, you know, they don't need to care about some of these things. But the industries need to make it easier and better communication with people so that they actually have a reasonable chance of making these decisions that are more ethical, more, you know, environmentally sustainable, more data privacy, support local journalism, things like that. And another thing I'll say on top of that, without ranting too much here, is a lot of social media right now, not going to call anyone out, but it is addictive, right? There's been studies that come out there. It is addictive to people. And so to say that someone who is addicted to something is able to make a fully rational choice to not do something, particularly when societal pressure, you know, if you're a young person and you're not on TikTok, you feel pressure that you're being left out, right? So to say that that person can just make the choice to not be in TikTok is unfair, because they feel obligated to a large degree to participate in that system. And when you talk about on a similar side, when you talk about advertisements, and the behaviors that are being promoted in advertising are fast fashion, are plastic consume, are encouraging people to drive everywhere, right? You are creating a mentality of people is that's what they're aspiring to in life. That's what they think is the most, is the goal, because that's the message that companies and content and shows are putting out there. It makes it very hard for somebody to walk a line where they feel actually their ethics aligns with their goal in ethics aligns with their actual decisions. And so then they feel this very cognitive dissonance, or I think it's the right word, but like they feel very conflicted in how they're being. And then that creates paralysis to even wanting to make a change at all. And so it creates this thing where people feel oftentimes like I can either go live in a hut in the woods or I can just participate in modern society. And there's almost no in between. That's how they feel oftentimes, whether or not that's the truth. There is oftentimes middle ground. But when you feel like that, you're like, okay, I'm not going to be the outlier. It's going to go be a hermit. So I'm going to participate in all this and I'm just going to say yes. And I'm going to just, you know, I'm not going to spend the months and years to educate myself on this. So long story short, what I'm saying is consumers are pushing brands to do more ethical things, but the brands currently haven't provided them enough choice and more like informed, easy to navigate choice that they can really show to brands that, you know, that their change, like that a change is what they want, right? Because they feel stuck in the system. And so really it's on companies to change, but consumers are identifying. Actually, one last thing, I know I'm going to rant here, but last thing I'll say is the Edelman does this trust barometer, and which is what and Edelman actually has its own issues because they've been found to be engaging greenwashing by representing oil companies and such. But they had this stat in last year's trust barometer, which showed that people want like 70%, I think it was something like this, don't quote me on this, or the stat, I'm probably going to get off a little bit, but like 70% of people want businesses to be more sustainable, but only 8% or 10% of people believe that businesses are being environmentally sustainable, right? Environmentally sustainable. So that gap of 60% between what people want from companies to what they believe they're actually doing is a massive gap to overcome in order to win people over and make them feel like the companies are the type of businesses they want to purchase from.
And I think that's a really good time to sort of bring us into the quick fire questions. The first one that I have for you is, what is the most sort of useful websites or people that you follow to stay on the pulse of your industry and ethical advertising?
That is a lot. Because right now it's oftentimes coming from individuals, right? But I will also say is, and this is one of the things that we, so first off, I guess a plug for the work we do at the UN. Probably need to change this URL, not be so long, but www.consciousattentioneconomy.org. You can download our, we created a more public focused, like digestible version of the policy paper that we developed with the UN. It talks about 10 principles that are basically taking the UN sustainable development goals and how do you actually apply them to the attention economy, the advertising industry, social media industry, things like that. So I do recommend people checking that out. We will upload things as time goes on. And with that, I want to say is when it comes to the different websites, you know, there's environmental sustainability, data privacy, supporting local journalism, DE&I, all that kind of stuff. They all are relevant, related to each other, but they also all have their own lanes in terms of the experts and how they're trying to push things forward, right? So in my mind, it's great to think of them all as part of the same idea of creating healthier online spaces. But when you're somebody who's trying to, oh, I want the best solutions in environmental sustainability, where do I go? For example, Ad Net Zero in the advertising space is a industry group that is trying to collaborate, create collaboration across brands, advertising agencies, publishers to create solutions and put them out there. There's also an organization called Purpose Disruptors out of the UK, which they've worked with a group called Clean Creatives, and they have a whole initiative and they put out a lot of news on how to, you know, reimagine the the advertising messaging and other things like that to support more environmentally sustainable behaviors, right? When it comes to data privacy, I mentioned Neutronian. He's based out of Malaysia. He has an organization that is all about trying to create more data, you know, how do you manage data privacy, particularly when you have large global powers and, you know, in the eastern side of the globe, right? And not only there, but trying to control ecosystems, right? And like, how do you actually break out of that? Then there are, from DE&I, a great organization is Bridge. They're specifically in the advertising space, right? Where they focus on how, as a business, do you incorporate diversity, equity, inclusion in a way that enhances your brand value and respects people and promotes to get diverse ideas, which are oftentimes the best ideas, into, you know, out there in the public. And then there's another person. This is more on the data privacy side, but they and they've actually like kind of separated themselves from the advertising industry. But if you want a different perspective as how a ecosystem like this could work, Doc Searles, D-O-C-S and last name S-E-A-R-L-S, I believe it might be yes, has a bunch of books on this. Him and his his wife, his partner in crime on all of this, have some really wonderful materials on how to think about data privacy that actually respects people. So there's a lot more I can go into. I'm not going to just, but like, you know, to treat it like follow some people that are saying, Humane Tech is another great one. Follow some people who are saying some really wonderful things. And how do you listen more to those people?
Tons of great stuff to check out and a plug. So
yes, yes. Always love a good plug. You know, it's a, I am an advertiser after all.
The final question I have for you, and it's something that we ask everybody, which is on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Christopher?
Depends who you ask, I guess is the answer, the real answer to that. But no, I would say I am sufficiently weird. So I think like an 8, maybe. And the reason why I said it is, you know, I'm oftentimes to people I come across as normal, which I can't stand as a term. But, you know, I'm a queer man, for example, which sometimes, you know, doesn't come across as obvious. I mean, I have a rainbow flag behind me, so it's probably pretty obvious right now. But, you know, I'm a queer man who also likes wearing bow ties, pocket squares, and vests, right? And you know, dresses a little bit more traditionally masculine. I'm a born and raised New Yorker who is a devout environmentalist and likes to spend most of the time in nature. Like I spent 2 years working with endangered species in remote areas of the world, you know, traveling through the, living in the rainforest, living in tents, but also I feel very at home in New York City. I'm someone who works for an advertising ecosystem that is, you know, one of the foundations of the capitalistic system that we exist in, but really believe that, you know, it needs to change. And, you know, I think that is a bit of, most people either say the system is so broken, we need to go a different direction, or they are part of the system and they feel, you know, just to feel almost obligated maybe to double down on it, or they're reaping the benefits of it. So long story short, I consider myself very sufficiently weird because I don't fit into any of these boxes that people try and, you know, put around people. And so I think I keep people on their toes fairly often, including my, you know, my own family and all that kind of stuff. And I'm very proud of it. So, you know, happy to be a weird guy.
That's exactly the answer I want when I ask that question, because you can never trust somebody who goes in the middle. You can never trust somebody who says, oh, five.
Well, and to your point, you know, anytime someone, and to give people benefit of the doubt of like, they might have thought about it really thoroughly and were like, no, I think I am a five, right? And so give them that. But a lot of times people will just say a five or something like that in that season because they haven't thought about it sufficiently, right? And I, like, for example, I'm in a queer dodgeball league, gay dodgeball league. It's a lot of fun. And this whole thing. But the amount of times that I get told in the gay dodgeball league that's filled with people who are, you know, don't fit into the normal system, a lot of people, they tell me all the time that I'm weird, right? And they say it with an endearing way. And they say it in a way that's like, yeah, we love that you keep us on your toes, on our toes. But there's only so many times people tell you that you're like, okay, I guess I'm a little weird. And I might as well either take pride in that or become self-loathing. And self-loathing is not a great solution to most things, so, or pretty much anything. So, you know, happy to fall into that category. And, you know, to everyone else, I hope they can think deeply about it and give themselves the benefit of the doubt that maybe they might be weirder than they might otherwise think.
Brilliant. That's an amazing place to leave it. So I'll just say thank you so much for your time, Christopher. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Josh. I know I went on some tangents there, so I hope the information was concise enough and it answered your questions.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.